on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Yes, we are finishing up National Animal Rights Awareness Week. We're on the tail end. And with us to discuss the law as it relates to our furry and feathered friends is one of the nation's strongest animal advocates, attorney Jane McBride. She has a bachelor's degree in fisheries and wildlife biology and agricultural journalism, as well as a law degree. She is the founder and principal in Illinois Humane. It focuses on cruelty and neglect investigations of animals, including horses, and the recovery and rehabilitation of animal victims in these cases. She received the 2023 Excellence in the Advancement of Animal Law Award. Thank you so much for joining us. Hi, Jane.
Delighted to be here, Karen. Thank you so much for doing this show, and good afternoon.
So let's talk about how the law views animals. Is an animal a piece of property, or is an animal more akin to a human being?
Karen, animals are considered property in the law. However, they are considered a unique category of property, and therefore they do have a good number of protections within the law and considerations within the law.
And, you know, I get a lot of callers who say, my cat went into the vet and I believe there was malpractice and my cat died. And lawyers just don't take these cases. And it's not because lawyers are heartless or don't like animals. If you can explain to our listeners why it's so difficult to sue a vet for any kind of malpractice.
Sure, and I'd love to talk a little bit about that. It's because they are personal property, Karen, and the only damages available is the market value of that animal should it unfortunately perish, and or the costs involved. And let's put this in a little bit of perspective. A mistake in the practice of veterinary med is not necessarily going to be eligible for vet malpractice. It's got to be a situation of negligence where they did not meet the standard of care. Now, there are a few things you can do, Karen, if we can go through that.
Sure.
So just because I know this is very frustrating for people. One thing you can do if you seriously feel that they were not meeting the standard of care is you can always file a complaint with the Illinois Veterinary Licensing and Disciplinary Board, and they will do their own investigation of the situation. And that's gonna put some quivers in the vets if they get a complaint like that filed against them. So they'll take notice of that. The other thing you can do is just get your ducks in a row and contact the vet clinic. I had a situation where it was a dental situation. One of the risks was a potential eye impact. And the individual, the owner of that animal, was neither warned of that potential risk, nor when it actually did happen, did the clinic respond correctly, and the animal suffered about 7 days before the animal went into emergency care on a holiday. So considerable expense involved there and a lack of disclosure. Even wondering if the doc that did it even knew if that risk did exist. And so very carefully set this out for the clinic, all the facts, all the expenses, and there was the vet clinic, short of a case being filed, did provide a recovery on that. So if you do feel that it is actual negligence, there's nothing wrong with going back to the vet clinic, setting it out factually, and letting them make a determination. They don't want unhappy clients, and they certainly need to know if there is a situation neglect that occurred within the clinic due to office staff or whatever.
And I do think that people, you know, it's not always the money that they're concerned about. It's like they don't want that to happen to somebody else. And as you said, you know, if a cat is worth, you know, $100, that's not worth it for a lawyer. It's not say it's not worth it, but what is a lawyer going to have, like 3 years of litigation and expenses of thousands of dollars to, and the most you can get is $100 at the end of the day. It's just not something that lawyers will take. But I assume,
nor
Jane,
does the client want to go through that, Karen.
Yeah.
That's a horrible situation for the client. They're hoping for some kind of response. And that was exactly the situation here, is that in this situation, the client just did not, the owner just did not want somebody else going through this. So that was indeed the situation.
And I suppose, just before we take a break, is that if it's a racehorse that's worth millions of dollars for breeding purposes, that's a whole different story if there's malpractice, right? Because there's money at the end of the rainbow.
One of the leading cases in Illinois is just that, that actually established malpractice, vet malpractice in the state. It was a horse that was taken care of, and it was worth a lot of money.
Let's talk about, what are the laws about neglect and cruelty to animals, just generally in the state of Illinois?
Illinois Animals Act is the original act on that. It is a criminal statute. There's about four levels: neglect, which is, just basic owner's duties, and there's cruelty, and the extreme weather provisions are in the cruelty provision. That means even when you've got the animal at home, you need to provide adequate shelter. That's under the neglect provisions. But also, when you get to these extreme conditions, you need to make sure that that animal does not head towards a situation of hypothermia. And in these conditions, my 9-year-old came in panting and extremely hot today. I have not let him back out the door. So that's something that's really got to be watched. Of course, the car provision is in the act. There's aggravated cruelty for companion animals, and there's torture. There are a variety of provisions in that act, and it's all first offense in some of these is misdemeanor, but it goes right up to felony with that aggravated cruelty as a felony.
Jane, I saw it was just last week, a Naperville man was sentenced to, I believe it was 8 years in prison after he beat his family dog following an argument with his partner. He was also banned from ever owning a dog again. Do you see, in your experience in animal rights work, that prosecutors are taking these cases a little bit more seriously as far as prosecuting them and punishing them as they have in the past?
Absolutely. They're getting much more proficient at working with these laws, and they are taking it much more seriously. That 8 years in prison, it's pretty impressive. I hate to see the facts of that case that inspired both the prosecutor and the court to do that. It was probably pretty darn egregious. But if he did this in front of the family or something, all sorts of factors weigh into that. We were one of the first states in the country to have provisions that guided judges to prohibit ownership of animals. Glad to see that they're finally doing it never have an animal before. They used to hold rule that they couldn't have it for 2, 3, 4 years. But this case sounds really extreme. We are starting to see it. We do need to continue to educate our prosecutors, but we're seeing some great work in some of our counties as well.
I saw that Bob Berlin, who is the DuPage County State's Attorney, he is launching a new animal protection unit. And, he has quoted as saying, just like children and just like seniors, our animals are some of the most vulnerable victims. They can't speak for themselves. We have to speak for them. Good for you, Bob. And I imagine that when you have these prosecutorial divisions, that they are trained, right, in special ways to prosecute, and experts and those types of things. So they might be better guided missiles coming up in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my retirement projects, Karen, is to make sure our prosecutors are trained. I'm very glad to see DuPage has had some tough cases out there, which has been an inspiration, I'm sure, for S.A. Bender. I've worked with them on a couple of these cases. Will County, Jim Glasgow, and Kankakee County is another one that's doing some great work. McHenry County traditionally has done some great work. So, to keep these offices trained is a real trick. So it's great to see that a unit has actually been formed, and that kind of emphasis will be placed on making sure you've got trained prosecutors, 1 year to the next.
Yeah. So, another thing that's interesting is the correlation between cruelty to animals and cruelty to humans. I don't think we should be surprised, but if you look at the documentation of it, Urban Resource Institute and Domestic Violence Hotline conducted a survey focused on domestic violence affects survivors of pets and their families. Among respondents, 37% said their abuser had threatened to harm or kill a pet, and 29% the abuser had actually harmed or killed pets. So that is a very, very, very high statistic. Is that something that you see out there all the time, Jane?
Domestic violence is one of the worst, and that's because they are trying to threaten their victim, and so they actually go through with the cruelty, which is horrible. And some of the worst cruelty is in these domestic violence cases. Very fortunately, in Illinois, we've got, in our family law statutes, we've got pets written into the Stalking Act, the Domestic Violence Act. We've got statute. We've got it written into. We've got protective orders for pets, specifically for pets. So, and of course, the Humane Care Act. So we have got a lot of protections in place, just because of that. It is a very upsetting thing to see. But yes, I mean, truly there is a link, and the FBI and the police departments do, definitely, recognize that. As, you know, everybody starts, unfortunately, they're killing with animals. And that starts the adrenaline rush or whatever it is that causes these people to do this thing. We always used to work, young, I hate to point it out on the boys, but the young boys, you always, you know, they're torturing cats or whatever. I will tell you, the juvenile division and prosecutor's office take that extremely serious these days. Those kids get right into psychological help, which, again, Tom Dart years ago, shout out to Tom Dart, put in the requirements for psychological evaluation for these for the violation of these violent crimes when juveniles are involved, and he put that in the act when he was in the House of Representatives. So we've had that in our law for a long time.
Let's talk a little bit about family law and how the judges have authority to decide where FIDO goes when the parties split up. What does the law say about that, Jane?
Right. In 2018, Senator Linda Holmes, on her own inspiration, which was great, Alaska had just done it, and so Senator Holmes brought this into our act, in the Marriage Dissolution Act, where if the property, if the animal is marital property, the judges, the court must consider the well-being of the companion animal in the dissolution of that marriage. And it's really come along. The family law practitioners are doing a great job with this. The judges are acknowledging evidence on the physical health and emotional stability of the animals, and therefore looking at who the primary caregiver was, who's been giving the daily care, and who's going to be able to provide the financial has the financial capability to actually take care of the animal. So the judges and the practitioners are taking this very seriously. It's great to see. We hate to see this in the sheltering world, Karen, when the animal ends up in the shelter. This goes to estate planning as well. People have to plan for their animals. One of the things we're seeing as well is that the family practitioners are encouraging pet custody agreements in a dissolution situation, that they actually agree on this. They, you know, visitation schedules, the division of the responsibilities, and who's going to have the financial responsibility for the pets upon the dissolution. So if it comes to a fight, it's important to have your records together, and also it can get down to be a battle of the experts using veterinarians and behaviorists as to which party is better to take care of this animal.
And I've had a couple cases, Jane, where the dog went with the child. So if dad had the children for Monday through Wednesday, the dog went with dad, and then Thursday through Friday was with mom and rotating weekends. So this dog was being transported, and it was just in the best interest of the children that they always have their dog with them. And I thought that was a really great result.
And that is a consideration, is the kids. You know, if the dog is bonded or the kids are bonded to the dog, that is a consideration in these cases as well. Yes.
We literally have 60 seconds. Talking about companion animals, service and therapy animals, what are the differences and what are the rights of people who have these animals? We have really just a few minutes, a few seconds.
Sure, actually. And I got a quick answer for you. The Attorney General's Office has got a great piece online regarding service animals and assistant animals and the law pertaining to those. Service animals are highly trained animals to deal with specific physical disabilities. Therapy animals or assistant animals are emotional support, and I would direct your listeners to that brochure, the Attorney General's Office, their disability rights section has put it together, and it's really a good piece.
Thank you. Jane McBride, if people want to reach you or donate to your cause, Illinois Humane, a really great organization, how would they reach you and how would they reach your cause?
Humane, one word, .org is the website, or you can find us on Facebook, and we certainly appreciate it. This is expensive work, bringing these guys around after they've been victims of these cases, or oftentimes we have to hold them during the court proceedings, and so we're holding them without necessarily getting remuneration for that. So do appreciate that a great deal.
All right, Jane, thank you. Take care, and take care of your animals, everybody.